Our portion this evening is from the end of verse 7, when Jephthah, the judge we've been looking at, died. And then before the next judge arrives on the scene in chapter 13, who is, does anybody know? The most famous judge of all? Samson. Before Samson comes on, we have three minor judges. Three minor judges. I wonder if we could have up on the screen, for those at home, those in the building have a handout, just a summary of where we've got to in this book. There are several cycles in the main body of the book, from chapter 3 to the end of chapter 16. And usually a cycle consists of a major judge. So Jephthah was a major judge, Gideon, Deborah, Ehud. But on the odd occasion, between two major judges, there have been minor judges. So we already looked a few months ago at Shamgar after Ehud, who was a minor judge. And this evening, we want to look at three minor judges, Ibzan, Elon, and Abdon. Ibzan, Elon, and Abdon. And because they're minor judges, there's not much details given. And as Dale Ralph Davis says, we crave more detail. Some flesh on the bones of Ibzan, Elon, and Abdon's lives. No stirring deeds recorded, no gripping stories, no miracles. This does not necessarily mean that they were nobodies, that they had no stories to tell. It means only that the Bible has not told them. We must beware of thinking that these judges were obscure or unimportant. We don't know why the Bible tells us so little about them. But we do know that the Bible tells us a lot about the Bible, Dale Ralph Davis says. It tells us that the purpose of the Bible is not to tell us about every Ibzan, Elon, and Abdon. Its focus is not on man's life, but on God's action. That's important, isn't it? I think our brother Saeed brought that out in the servant song last Bible study. Even looking at the major judges, the purpose hasn't been to look at some very interesting stuff in terms of the life of the judge. The whole tenor has been to focus on Jesus Christ. So may God enable us to do that in the Bible study this evening. I think Tola and Jair were minor judges in chapter 10 as well. I forgot to mention those. So the message of the Bible isn't look at Jephthah or look at these three minor judges. It's behold your God. Behold, I am the Lord who delivers Israel and who delivers us, his people. So, what can we learn about God from these three minor judges? Because there's not much here. So what does this tell us about God? Two things. The first thing is the mystery of God's providence. Have you read John Flavel's book with that title? The Mystery of Providence. One of Flavel's most famous quotes is that you can have communion with God in his providences. Do you do that? Not just in the word and in prayer and in the means of grace, but with what God is doing to us. He is teaching us. Now, what is the mystery of God's providence here? What's the main thing about these three judges? What are the details? Let me just remind us. So, chapter 12, Ibzan, 30 sons and 30 daughters, and he brought in 30 daughters from the outside for his sons. Does that strike you? Then Elon, Are there any children mentioned for Elon? Verses 11 and 12. Can you see any offspring mentioned? No. Isn't that interesting? Somebody who had 30 sons and 30 daughters, and then somebody who had none. And then the final minor judge, Abdon. How many offspring are mentioned here, if any? 40 sons, but there's something else as well. 30 grandsons. And if you're into animals, how many donkeys? 70 donkeys. Can you see the variety? Ibsan, fruitful. Elan, not so fruitful. Abdon, fruitful. But the main contrast isn't just between the three of them, it's between Ibsan and the judge that went before, Jephthah. How many children did Jephthah have? One. What daughter? What happened to her? One way or another, she disappeared. He lost his daughter. The judge that comes immediately after, Ibsan, it's only Ibsan and Jephthah that have daughters mentioned of all the judges. And isn't it significant that the one judge, Jephthah, who only had one daughter and he lost his daughter, is then followed by Ibsan, who not just had 30 sons but had 30 daughters. Isn't that interesting? What is God teaching us in the mystery of his providence? One is fruitful. The next seems barren. The one after is fruitful. The one before, the first one that was fruitful, is barren after he loses his daughter. In the Old Testament, there's something very important about children. Psalm 127. It might be worth us reading a couple of verses from Psalm 127. This is applicable to us as New Testament Christians, but there is something in the Old Testament that is quite important about children. Behold, verse 3 of Psalm 127, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. Remember Mr. Quiverful in one of the works of literature? Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. Now, in the Old Testament, children were a sign of spiritual blessing. So what is this, the mystery of God's providence? This is a mystery. None of us understand it. Why should Jephthah be seemingly barren spiritually? Why should the man that follows him be fruitful? Why should one Christian be successful? Why is another Christian, just as godly, go through difficulties? Why should a missionary go to a part of the world and die even before they get there? Why should another missionary, as soon as they've arrived, be abundantly blessed? Why should one preacher be mightily used of God? Why should another preacher, just as faithful, not be used as much? Why do some bear great fruits? Why do others bear less fruits? There's a mystery, isn't there? There's a mystery. And I don't think we're meant to know the answers. God isn't calling you and me to be spiritually successful. He's calling you and me to be obedient. I'm using this extremely carefully now, this next sentence. he gives different gifts to all of us. So with those gifts, we've got to do the most that we can, but some are going to go further than others. In the parable of the sower, Jesus said, the seed that bore fruit, some bore more fruit than others. Do you enjoy communion with God in the mystery of his providence? 1 Corinthians 3. Maybe this is more relevant to us. 1 Corinthians 3. This is the New Testament application of what we're trying to say. Verse 5. We could say, who is Jephthah? Who is Ibzan? Who is Paul? Who is Apollos? But ministers through whom you believed, as the Lord gave to each one. I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. So then neither he who plants is anything, nor he who waters, but God who gives the increase. That's it. It's not whether we're a Jephthah or whether we're an Ibsan or whether we're an Elon. It's whether we are God's. And that's all that matters in the end. And just to enjoy communion with God in the mysteriousness of his providences. He wants us to learn something about him, I'm sure. I don't know how Paul learned the lesson, but he says, I have learned in whatsoever state I am to be content therein. I've learned how to be abased, to be emptied, and to be full. Here's a hymn I found helpful. Do you learn from the mystery of God's providence? Lord, teach me to adore the hand whence all my comforts flow, and let me in the desert land a glimpse of Canaan know. Isn't that true? Sometimes when everything is going against us, that's when heaven is more real. And oh, whate'er of earthly bliss thy sovereign will denies, accepted at thy throne of grace, let this petition rise. This is Anne Steele's hymn. She struggled with a lack of assurance. This is her petition. Whatever your situation, whatever the mystery of God's providence in your life may this be our prayer. Give me a calm, a thankful heart, from every murmur free, the blessings of thy grace impart, and let me live to thee. Whether I'm an Ibsan, whether I'm a Jephthah, let me live to the glory of God. And I'm sure of this. God has always got something better in store for you. He's always got that. I'm reminded of John and Mary. They never had their own children. But in the mystery of God's providence, over time, didn't they have a huge family, brothers and sisters in Christ? So that's one lesson. Let's hurry on to the second lesson, and then we'll go to prayer. So what else do we learn about our God in this chapter of Minor Judges? Well, it's a very sobering lesson, leading on from the church in Laodicea. It's the absence of God's power, the absence of God's power. Have a look again at these three judges. Look at the details. Ibsan. What was he good at, Ibsan? What was he good at? He gave away 30 daughters in marriage and brought in 30 daughters from elsewhere for his sons. That's what he did. What was he good at? Matchmaking. He was a good matchmaker. That's one way to grow the kingdom. Where was he? Bethlehem. If you look at Joshua, it's in Joshua chapter 19, verse 15, the Bethlehem here wasn't Bethlehem Ephrata. It wasn't Bethlehem Judah. It was Bethlehem Galilee. What about Elon? What's he good at, or what's he mentioned for here? Look at his name. He was of the country of Zebulun. What was he proud of? Well, I think it's right to surmise that. Elon the Zebulunite. That's what he was renowned for, being a Zebulunite. There's no mention of God, is there? It's like, a certain preachers, mention of preachers, but I was reading about a certain preacher from the last century, and what he was renowned for wasn't preaching the gospel, but for being a Welshman. Now, it's a bit like that with Elon. He's a Zebulunite. That's what comes out. He's a nationalist. And what about Abdon, the third of the minor judges? We've got mention of 40 sons and 30 grandsons and 70 donkeys. Where have we come across the donkeys before? Can anybody remember? Which judge had his family ride on donkeys? What did it signify? Donkeys. Power. Pomp. Ceremony. It was Gideon and his sons who rode on donkeys. They wanted the trappings of kingship. Gideon wouldn't call himself a king, but because that wouldn't be spiritual. But they behaved like a king. And I think it's significant here that the mention of grandsons means that Abdon wanted to keep it in the family. He wanted make sure that there was a lineage, that his sons and his sons' sons would continue to rule. It was nepotism. Nepotism. Now then, what you haven't got in these minor judges, you had it with the other minor judges we've been looking at. You have got no mention whatsoever of the key thing. What was a judge? A judge wasn't supposed to be a matchmaker in the first place. A judge wasn't supposed to be a nationalist in the first place. A judge wasn't supposed to be a king in the first place. What was the purpose of a judge? To administer justice, but what in God's providence did most of the judges do as well as administer justice? They delivered the children of Israel from the oppression of the enemy. And what you've got here is three judges, one after the other, who are famous for everything but doing what they're supposed to do, which is bring deliverance. That's very sad. Do you notice something else that's missing? From all the other accounts of the judges, there is a phrase that isn't found here. And it's not just God delivered. There's another phrase. This is a harder question, but it's an important one. Yeah, that's true. There's no mention of the Spirit coming upon a person. That's occurred with some of the judges, but that's not the one I'm thinking of, but that's a good answer. Another excellent answer, but it's something to do with the land. The land had rest for so many years. Yeah, the people were oppressed because of their sin. God delivered them into the hand of the enemy. In their oppression, they cried to the Lord. This is the cycle now I'm going through again. And the Lord raised up, put his Spirit upon a judge, and that judge delivered the people, and as a result of that, the land had rest. There's no mention of God's deliverances. There's no mention of God raising up a judge. There's no mention of the Spirit coming upon a judge, and there is no mention of the land having rest. Instead, all you've got is For Ibsan, he judged Israel 7 years and died. For Elon, he judged Israel 10 years, died. Abdon, he judged Israel 8 years, and then Abdon, the son of Hillel the Pirathonite, died. No mention of spiritual rest, physical rest, no mention of God's deliverance. I hope I'm not being unfair on them here, but it seems to me they were just time servers. They were not God's servants, that they weren't called by God, that they were just in it for themselves. It's sad, isn't it? The man-centeredness of all of this. Bethlehem, Judah, was going to be famous in many centuries' time for God coming in deliverance. What is impossible with man is possible with God. That was going to happen in Bethlehem, Judah. Bethlehem, Galilee was famous for matchmaking. Matchmaking. Man trying to move things forward, not God raising up children. Here's Dale Ralph Davis again. As you can gather, I've been helped by his comments. Well worth reading. Could the writer be implying that Israel, in her ongoing apostasy, because you remember in the book of Judges, as we're going through these cycles, things are getting worse all the time. It's ever-decreasing cycles. So Dale Ralph Davis says, Israel in her ongoing apostasy has forfeited God's rest, even though there is yet a semblance of normality in that certain leaders still manage to judge. If Israel no longer enjoys that divine gift, but knows only human activity, oh, life goes on, but the quality of life is no longer there. Life among the Lord's people may seem normal, but the appearance deceives. Something is absent, something is missing. Where is the Lord God's deliverances? Where is the Lord raising up men and women? Where is the power of the Spirit? And Davis goes on to say, once you see this, you are hardly surprised when Ichabod arrives in 1 Samuel, the name given to the baby. And the name Ichabod means the glory has departed. The glory has departed. Brothers and sisters, that's my fear sometimes for the Lord's people in the West, that we just keep things going and not realize that maybe the power of the Lord is not present with us in a way that it was many years ago. May we stir ourselves up. May we not be like the church in Laodicea. May we admit our need to God. Remember, as we pray for a mission, there is no tension between evangelism and praying for the Spirit. They go together. They go together. The gospel going in the power of the Spirit, and we being revived by the Spirit. But there's a difference, is there not, between just keeping things going in human strength and God breaking in, God raising up children in Zion. Yes, it's right to do things. I'm not against activity, but I am against activity that is done for its own sake. Oh, yes, it's right to teach our children. It's right to network. There's nothing wrong with those things, but there is everything wrong when we are depending on that for the future of the church and for the maintenance of spiritual life. Don't we need God to come in power again? And what a difference it would have made to these three judges if not matchmaking or nationalism or nepotism had been what they were renowned for. But God being used of God. There's nothing like that. Thank God that the imperfection of the judges causes us to sigh and look to the one who is going to come. We know that, don't we? And he is not going to be the result of human activity. He is going to come in the fullness of the times. And he is going to be born not in Bethlehem, Galilee, but in Bethlehem, Judah. And he is going to be God's intervention and God's deliverance. Not for our salvation from the Philistines or a physical enemy, but for salvation from sin, death, hell, and the devil. And not so that we can have physical rest in this world, but that we can find rest for our souls in Jesus Christ in believing, and that we can find rest in that heavenly Canaan. So just three minor judges there, and God willing, we are coming to the last of the major judges, Samson. And what's going to be remarkable about Samson is that even though he was raised of God and used of God, he had major flaws as well. So it just brings us back to the grace of God, does it not?